Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome live to another edition of Carson's Corner in conjunction with MMALatestNews.com. My name is Bob Carson. We're pleased to be with you this Monday evening, 10 p.m., right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have a great show for you. I hope I'm coming out okay. We're having technical difficulties with my computer. It's just been absolutely horrendous. But hopefully we're broadcasting live on the air. And we have Carlos Condit, an opportunity to speak to Carlos Condit earlier in the afternoon. And this really marks the second or third big guest that we've had over the past couple of weeks. You recall last week we had Tim Boach and Jake Shields. And Carlos Condit has really been at the mainstay of talent in the welterweight division in the UFC. I mean, this is a guy, according to the UFC rankings, and you know, if you want to give that any credibility, that's fine. Carlos Condit was ranked third in the welterweight division as of August of this year. And, you know, there's no doubt about that this is one of the best welterweights in the world. This is a guy who won a championship in the WEC. This is a guy who won the interim championship, I believe back in 2009, if I'm not mistaken, against Nick Diaz. I could be wrong on the year. But, you know, Nas is a great fighter. And he's someone that, you know, really is one of the most durable fighters out there. And he was kind enough to give us some of his time here on Carson's Corner in conjunction with MMALatestNews.com, MMALatestNews.com. And you know how we do it here at Carson's Corner. We like to ask very, very in-depth questions that really explore various aspects of the fight game. I mean, whether it's training, whether it's mindset, whether it's some of the backstories, just all around the bases here on Carson's Corner. And, you know, Carlos Condit was a very, very pleasant person to talk to. Again, we really, really appreciate him taking the time to allow us to interview him. Some interesting takeaways, you know, from this interview that I don't want to spoil the interview for you, but you know, he's in recovery now. His recovery is going very, very well. I initially made a mistake in the beginning of the interview. I had thought that it was a punch that preceded the torn knee, MCL. But actually what happened was Carlos was actually getting out of the way of a kick, and he injured his leg, and we all saw this. And could you believe it was almost a year ago? I mean, I guess in another 4 or 5 months, it's going to be a year that he fought Tyron Woodley. I mean, it seems like it was just yesterday. It just shows you how time flies with these UFC events. I mean, it's really unbelievable. But yeah, so you know, he was an unfortunate incident. The fans were not happy with this fight. Most people that we saw during the time said that Woodley, you know, got the victory. He won round one. This was 7 minutes into the fight approximately. And it's just really unfortunate. It really is. But now he's doing very well. He's passed his physical therapy, and he's looking to get back into the octagon probably sometime later in the spring of next year. And there are a plethora of guys he can face. I mean, I can think of about 4 or 5 guys. And he mentioned about 4 or 5 opponents that he could potentially face when he comes back to the UFC. And that's going to be key. I mean, just a lot of talent in the welterweight division. And so we're going to play you that interview. It went about a little over a half hour here on Carson's Corner. And then also, we've got the UFC coming up. I'm so excited for the UFC card 182 in Las Vegas. It's not often that I get excited for a UFC card, okay? It's just not. You know, in my opinion and in the opinion of many other observers out there, and again, I don't do this full time. I don't, you know, I have a lot of other things going on in my life. So even some of these guys that do it full time can't even keep up with the cards. They can't even keep up with the fighters. There's what, 400 or 500 fighters on the UFC roster, and it's just difficult for everybody to really, you know, sometimes I'm watching a UFC card and I've never even heard of fighters on the undercard. It's really remarkable. But I'm genuinely excited for this UFC coming up this Saturday. Not for the whole entire card, although you've got some really, really good fights on this. I mean, in addition to, of course, the John Jones-Daniel Cormier fight, which Jones is a slight favorite, okay? And interestingly enough, Jones said that he wants to out-wrestle Cormier. And I found that fascinating because, you know, that's John Jones' ego talking. That's John Jones saying, I want to beat Daniel Cormier at his own game. And that's what a great champion does. You know, you look at Fedor, you look at Anderson Silva, you know, in his fights going back years, beating guys at their own game. And that would be remarkable because what I said was John Jones would neutralize Daniel Cormier with his reach. There's no question about that. Now, John Jones has a tremendous reach. He is a more well-polished striker, has more tricks at his disposal, can improvise to a great degree. And Daniel Cormier, his strength obviously is wrestling. Cormier's gotten decent striking, but you know the idea of John Jones going and wrestling Daniel Cormier is really something to see because I said that I do not believe or I did not believe that Daniel Cormier would be able to get John Jones down to the ground. Even John Jones himself said, you know, Cormier might get me down once or twice, but he's not going to be able to hold me down, you know, during this fight. And so that's what makes it even more intriguing from my perspective is that John Jones says he's going to out-wrestle Daniel Cormier. Now, he could be saying that just to try to throw Cormier off. I don't know. You know, it's a best guess. I'd have to believe that John Jones is coming out on top, but this is a very, very intriguing matchup that I don't like the idea that it's been promoted on the but what else is new with the UFC? I mean, we've been talking back to 2007, the trash talk, the animosity, the negative values that the UFC uses to promote these fights. Again, I've been talking about this for a long time. Eddie Goldman has been talking about this for a long time. And you can listen to some of our previous shows. We're starting to upload our shows on YouTube now, our shows going back to 2007 and even before then, on youtube.com/BobCarsonMMA, youtube.com/BobCarsonMMA. You can listen to a lot of the shows there. But, you know, this is nothing new. And do these guys genuinely don't like each other? Who cares? I guess probably not. You know, it's an ego thing, I think, with John Jones. Daniel Cormier seems like a very nice guy. He's a little bit difficult to interview. He's a little difficult to track down, but that's not to be unexpected at his level. You know, he's a commentator. Seems like a personable guy, and I'm sure they're both nice guys in their own right. But I just, you know, the brawl and all this stuff that has led up to this fight, is it going to pay dividends for the UFC? Who knows what the pay-per-view buy is going to be? Dave Meltzer has done some reporting on some of the pay-per-view buys. Even something like the last pay-per-view, Robbie Lawler, Johnny Hendricks, got something in the neighborhood of 400,000 pay-per-view buys, which isn't a lot. So these are all interesting questions going forward for the UFC. Are they making money on these events? You know, is this going to be the biggest fight of all time? But whatever you think on with regards to the significance of this event, you have to agree that if John Jones does win this fight, he's pretty much going to be unstoppable in that division. And his legacy is really, really going to be something that nobody can contend with, you know. That's just the way it is. And so you also got on this fight card Donald Cerrone versus Miles Jury. And Donald Cerrone, I'm becoming a big fan of Donald Cerrone. You know, how can you not be a fan of Donald Cerrone? He goes out there, he fights frequently, fights in a crowd-pleasing way. He seems like a nice guy. Doesn't have any animosity towards a lot of fighters. You know, just a good-willed person who likes guns. No question about that. I have nothing against that. But, you know, look, I root for Donald Cerrone, and he's fighting Miles Jury, an undefeated fighter who's getting better and better every single outing. And, you know, the question is he going to be able to get Cowboy on the ground, or is he going to stand up with Cowboy? Miles Jury has improved striking, and so there's that aspect. And that's kind of a pick 'em fight, too, although I'd probably go with Cerrone. You know, I'm not one to say that my predictions are always 100% accurate, because they're really not. I'm probably about maybe 60-40, okay, in the right direction. And then you've got Hector Lombard, who we were trying to get on the show, is going against Josh Berkman, who just is coming off of the World Series of Fighting. And I think that's going to be a good matchup for Hector. Hector should be able to get him out of there pretty early and be en route to a title shot. So a lot of interesting things happening in the world of mixed martial arts. Okay, the UFC this weekend, I'm not going to lie when I tell you I'm looking forward to it. So without further ado, let's bring you my interview with Carlos Condit here on Carson's Corner in conjunction with MMALatestNews.com. All right, we're having some difficulty here. My computer, of course, is freezing up. This is ridiculous. Hopefully, you know, you all can hear me and know that we're trying to get this played out. This is, you know, I got this this service through Geek Squad, the Geek Squad service, because my computers are just always freezing. And I did an online chat yesterday with the service technician, and he actually accessed my computer from where he was, and it's all fixed. Oh, no problem at all. And then boom, you know, this happens. It's very, very frustrating, to say the least here. But we are trying to play that interview. My damn computer is freezing. Now, this is just very, very frustrating here. Let me try to access it via another computer here and just start to play it, because this is ridiculous here, folks. Just goes to show you the waste and inefficiency that the Geek Squad brings to me, right? You know, it's going to be fixed. I spent $70 on a new hard drive a few weeks ago, and boom, this just happens when it's really not supposed to happen. But we're going to try to have a different way here. We're going to try to log in and using another computer and ultimately play you this interview, because my one computer is just frozen, and I'm about to throw it out of a window. I really am. I do all my schoolwork on this computer, so it's kind of difficult for me just to get rid of it. But in any event, here is my interview with Carlos Condit. We apologize. Oh, where the hell is it? Oh, man. I just have the worst luck with these friggin' things, man. Let's see here. Yeah, I can't do anything with this friggin' computer, man. There it is. Okay. Here's my interview with Carlos Condit, ladies and gentlemen. This is Bob Carson of Carson's Corner, in conjunction with MMALatestNews.com. We have Carlos Condit on the line with us, and we've been absolutely thrilled to have him on the show. Our longtime listeners will know that Carlos has been on our wish list for guests for years now. Thanks for agreeing to come on the show, Carlos. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
I want to ask you about the status of your recovery from the knee injury you suffered in your last octagon appearance. For anyone listening who doesn't remember or wasn't paying attention, Tyron Woodley got the TKO over Carlos after hitting him with a punch that ultimately caused his knee to buckle and become injured. And clearly that has to be frustrating for you, Carlos, especially when it's a loss due to momentum and gravity as much as the punch preceding the stoppage. And I would say that he deserves credit for the win, but it's not like he KO'd you clean with a strike. Do you think that people drew too many conclusions about both of you as a fighter from what happened there?
Well, first off, it actually is a kick that spun me around. Well, it was a takedown that blew my ACL, and then the kick ultimately buckled my knee. So, you know, he fought a good fight, and legitimately, you know, won the fight. I guess there's been, you know, some debate as to whether, you know, he deserves credit for, you know, the win or this and that. And, you know, I don't worry too much about that. But what I would like to say is that I'm looking forward to getting a rematch with Tyrone Woodley. And actually, I've talked to the UFC and Tyrone himself about the rematch.
Oh, really? Do we have any idea when that might take place?
No, you know, I know that he's scheduled already to fight. I believe he's fighting Kelvin Gastelum.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing set in stone, but it's definitely on the horizon.
Yeah, he was probably ahead in the fight, but only 7 minutes into the fight had passed. Can you take us through your recollections of that fight? I mean, what happened with the injury and your feeling on both generally?
Came out and got caught with some big punches right off, lost the first round clearly, and then the second round I kind of started warming up, started finding my rhythm, and I guess about halfway into the second, or maybe earlier than that. I got taken down, and on the takedown, felt something pop and burn, and hurt quite a bit in my knee. We were in guard, ended up, you know, getting back on our feet, and I think when I got taken down, I think my knee, that's when the ACL blew, and then I went to, you know, kind of engage. I knew that I probably needed to finish quick because I knew I was injured,
right,
and got kicked in my other knee, or got kicked in the other leg, and then went to kind of pivot with the force of the kick, and because my ACL was gone, the knee just buckled, and I went down there, and when my knee twisted up like that, I tore my meniscus right there.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to figure that you were in some serious pain, knowing how durable you are in the ring generally.
It didn't feel nice.
Yeah, and despite what happened, I still think that you could have potentially beat Tyron if the fight had continued, if you didn't get the knee injury, and certainly if you guys ever meet up again. I've read online that your recovery has been going well, though.
It has, yeah. I got with a great physical therapist, had a great surgeon, and things are going well.
Can you give the folks at home an idea of where you're at with your physical therapy and when you might resume training and fighting again?
I'm pretty much done with the bulk of the physical therapy, and now I'm just back into my regular strength and conditioning routine with definitely some emphasis on continuing to get the knee strong and stable and all that, and bring my leg strength back to where it was before I got injured. But I'm sparring, and I'm training pretty much 100%. I still got to be careful with certain things, but as far as a fight, I don't have anything really on the horizon. I was thinking maybe March or April, but then I didn't get matched, which is fine. I think that would have really been kind of pushing my timeline for recovery. So, you know, maybe later in the spring.
Is this the most major injury you've suffered so far? I mean, my impression that it seems like the most significant injury of your career.
Yeah, it is for sure.
Before we talk about your fight career and your impending comeback, I have to ask you about your family background and the political element to it. I'm highly interested in politics. I have another show dedicated to it exclusively, and I try to stay plugged in with everything that's happening relating to the governance of our great country. Am I right in saying that your father was chief of staff for New Mexico governor, at one time highly visible political candidate, Bill Richardson?
Yeah, he was.
Richardson was a presidential candidate at one point, and he attracted a lot of attention and buzz. If he had secured the nomination, do you think things would have been differently in your life?
Probably not my life. Probably not my dad's life, but, you know, that's what my dad does for a living. I do what I do for a living. You know, it's, you know, I don't know. Things may have changed. I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah. And there was also the allegation of corruption, which I think dented his chances at being a very visible Democratic nominee due to his status as an effective governor and appeal to Latino voters. And it must have been very interesting for you to witness some of this stuff with your family connections. How shocking did it get for you?
In politics, honestly, nothing shocks me.
Yeah.
And at the higher levels of government, you know, I think corruption, you know, we talk about corruption, the way that the system works, and I'm not saying that it's right, but you know, I think, you know, everybody owes somebody something when you get to those higher levels.
Right.
And you know, and it you know, I don't think that's right, you know, by any stretch the imagination. I think that's part of what's wrong with everything, you know, with a lot of things that are going on today. You know, and yeah, I guess I'm not real familiar with all the accusations, but I think, you know, that's how it goes in politics these days, unfortunately.
Is your father still involved in the political world?
He ended up, you know, he got involved with Richardson. My dad was and is still a union organizer here in New Mexico. He was an electrician for like 30 years and got involved with that, with the politics and, you know, lobbying for labor issues and stuff in, you know, on the state level. And that's kind of how he got hooked up with Richardson. And now that Richardson's terms are over, he's back doing that.
I see. Is politics a family business at all, or something you could develop an interest in?
I definitely have an interest. I mean, I was brought up in a labor movement, and you know, it's something that I definitely have an interest in.
Right. And is it something that you've considered beyond MMA? I mean, would you ever consider running for office at some point?
I don't think that I would ever really, I don't think I'd ever run for office, but, you can get involved in politics in a lot of other ways other than running for office.
That's a good point. And where would you say that you fall on the political spectrum?
I would say that I'm moderate. I'm moderate. I think some of my views are definitely liberal, but I'm a pragmatist, and I'm open to you know, looking at all different, you know, facts or aspects of an issue before I really make a decision.
Yeah, I mean, I'm someone who's disappointed in both parties. I think if you look at the congressional approval rating, it's very low, and over time I've shifted to being more of a progressive politically, although that sometimes doesn't leave me with agreement with the Democratic Party, and things are starting to change. You know, we're gradually, I think, seeing progressive issues becoming discussed much more often, you know?
I can definitely relate to that.
Absolutely. There are some other fighters that really have made an inclination to run for office. I mean, it's kind of interesting. A lot of MMA fighters have an interest in you know, politics. I mean, you look at someone like Brian Stann. I think he's even already positioning himself for a potential run at some sort of office when he feels the time is right. You of course had Chris Lytle run for office and whatnot. And so it's just interesting to see the connection between MMA and the world of politics.
Well, you know, in my experience with the sport and the people involved, you know, their life experience and their, you know, their personalities and everything kind of really runs the gamut. You know, you got people from all different walks of life, all different interests. So, it doesn't surprise me that people are involved in all sorts of things.
All right, enough of the political stuff. Let's talk about your UFC career. Even though you're still at the height of your competitive prowess, you've already distinguished yourself as a worthy title contender and guaranteed good fight. And you're one of the handful of fighters on the roster who literally guarantees action with their style and skill set. I mean, you've had so many great moments in the ring that we could sit here for a long time recounting them and discussing. Hopefully we can get you back on in the future to go more in depth while also updating the fans out there on your current status. Your UFC career, you came into the organization after being the champion in the WEC and had a very impressive run there where you seemed to really find your groove as a fighter. And you debuted in the UFC with a very controversial loss to Martin Kampman, where he used his wrestling-based attack to neutralize you for round one, while the other two seemed to be more in your favor. How disappointing was it to debut like that in a fight most people felt you won?
It definitely took the wind out of myself. I had been on a run for a while. I think I was on a a pretty good tear, and then to lose such a close fight was disappointing.
You avenged the Kampman loss in a devastating rematch where you broke him down and punished him severely over at least three or four rounds. And Martin is an absolute warrior for hanging in there like that. But when you were going after him, it was like watching a shark in a shark tank. I mean, kind of like the ridiculous IFL logo with the shark and the MMA gloves. But I have to say, you truly looked your best in that fight, at least to me. Where would you say you were in the Kampman rematch in terms of your career, in terms of your personal performances? I mean, how satisfying was it to take such a decisive win after most people felt you got robbed the first time?
It was very satisfying. Everything just came together in that fight. My training camp was just stellar. Sometimes things go well in training camp and sometimes they don't, and that one, everything just came together, and it showed in my performance.
Am I right in saying you're someone built for five rounds? I mean, you're someone who almost always looks in good shape, in that portion of the fight, the championship rounds.
I definitely like a five-round fight. My endurance, I think, is definitely a tool or something I can use as a weapon. And as other guys start to fade, I can really, pick up the pace and push them. I have a lot of first round stoppages also. But as I've got older and as I've progressed in my career, I think five rounders are definitely. In addition to that being the main event or the bigger fights, I think that's the five round fight lends itself to my style and my my strong points.
Yeah, good point. That's exactly what I see. And many people felt you were on the other side of a bad decision when you beat Jake Ellenberger. And more than that decision, I want to highlight the fact that you survived multiple knockdowns from Ellenberger, who was more vicious and dangerous than the one we've seen more recently. How did you get through round one, and how hurt were you overall by his big shots?
That was probably the most hurt that I've been in a fight that I can remember. After I got dropped, maybe the first or the second time, I don't know. I thought that maybe the ref was going to jump in and stop the fight, but when he didn't, and I was still getting hit, then I was like, oh well, I got to do something. I'm still getting hit, so it just kind of kicked into survival mode and kind of went back to what I know, and I think I ended up taking him down and getting on top of him and surviving. But yeah, I was hurt pretty bad.
Yeah, I think you showed your grit and courage in that fight, and it was definitely admirable. The decision comes down really to the scoring of round one. I mean, I could definitely see it being a 10-8 round, but then I think the fight would have been more accurately scored a draw. I don't think that the judges wanted to give the fight to someone who won a single round, hence you getting the call. Do you have any further thoughts on that fight and the way it was scored?
I think that, well, I think I won the second and third round. Second one was close, but you know, I think I from what I remember, I reversed him, mounted him, you know, had him hurt in the third round. I won pretty decisively. You know what though? Like, I think that they should give more 10-8 rounds out. I think a fight, you know, even if I'm on the you know, the receiving end of the eight, if a guy gets dropped, you know, just like in boxing, you know, if a guy gets dropped in a boxing match, you know, it's a 10-8 round. I think if a guy gets legitimately dropped in an MMA fight, and is hurt, I think that should, you know, maybe be a 10-8 round. There's an argument for that. So in that case, you know, it probably would have been a draw. But you know, I just think that's how they should score it, and they should I think they should give out more 10-8 rounds in MMA.
How hard does Ellenberger hit relative to other fighters you faced, including the legendary shootboxer Andy Sauer?
Well, you know, there's everybody that I've competed against hits really hard. You know, I've been in the top 10 for, you know, for a really long time, and you know, fought a lot of guys, a lot of power. Ellenberger probably hit me the hardest, and I think he obviously has a lot of power, but a lot of that is he just connected cleanly. I think I just had my head sticking up in the air, and he just caught me clean. Andy Sauer, that was a long time ago. That was like, I guess 19 years old, so that was like 11 years ago. He hit hard. I remember probably the hardest thing he hit me with. He hit me with a knee and just shattered my nose. And later in that fight, but Ellenberger probably hit me the hardest of anybody.
You KO'd Dan Hardy with a vicious shot in a fight that I think many people misjudged on paper. And at the time, I think your hands are being underrated, but also improving steadily. And I think he came in, you know, thinking that you couldn't hurt him so badly and so quickly. And that was a huge moment with a tense atmosphere and an insane crowd. Can you take us through your memories of the Dan Hardy matchup and the way it went down?
Yeah, well, you know, like you said, going into that fight, I was the underdog in a lot of people's minds. He was coming off the fight with GSP. And he was kind of the man. He was the number one contender at that point. And, that was another fight that I just had a really, really good camp. Everything came together. And, that fight actually felt up to that point as comfortable as I had ever felt in the ring. And I think just stylistically, fighting another guy who was a striker, not going to try to take me down. I was able to go in and just kind of, you know, let loose and capitalize with my striking skills.
You silenced an entire arena of 20,000 people with that single punch, and that must have been quite a feeling. How did the fans react to you in the UK after the fight? I mean, did they give you props? Did they shout unintelligible drunken phrases at you, or both?
They were pretty cool after the fact. I think they were bummed out. You know, Hardy's a big draw. He's got a big fan base out there. But they were really cool. You know, that's the sport. It could have been me, you know, knocked out. I think that, they appreciated we both went in there and we put it on the line. We put a show on. So I got some hate after the fact over social media and that sort of thing, but you know, that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like that fight really put you over the top in terms of showing how good you are and how great you could be. I mean, you were well known before, but that was your biggest moment in the UFC, in my opinion. And Hardy said either of you could have been KO'd by the shot that landed first, but I'm not so sure. If anything, you're known for having a granite chin, especially relative to many other fighters in your weight division. Where do you think that durability comes from, and how much of it is strike awareness versus physical and mental attributes?
I think a lot of it's just kind of natural ability. I've got a kind of a big, hard head, and that's helped me out in a lot of situations. As far as either of us, you know, being knocked out with those punches, if you rewatch the fight, or if you look at pictures, I'm a taller guy than Dan is. I think I got like 2 or 3 inches on him. But you know, in the pictures, kind of right before when we're both loading up for the punches, I'm lower than him. I'm more loaded up on my legs, which is where your power comes from. So I think the reason he got knocked out and I didn't, he was more upright, and I was loaded up on my legs, loaded up through my hips, and I was able to generate more power. You know, so it was just honestly a matter of technique.
Yeah, I've often thought that the guys who see strikes coming are the ones who avoid getting those shut-off KOs where the brain shuts the body down for a second. And speaking of shut-off knockouts, you absolutely obliterated Dong Hyun Kim in a short but intensely brutal affair. And Woodley stopped them, but Kim threw that wacky spinning attack and generally fought with low ring IQ. I think that's fair to say. And you came out and just destroyed him, and he had no chance to do anything. And for my money, I thought that was one of the most impressive UFC performances of the last few years in any weight division. What are your recollections of that fight and the way it all came together on that night? Did you feel it when you were standing there, you know, across the cage, more than you have in less complete performances?
Well, when I got to the dressing room, I was just kind of in the zone, and just in a place of, I guess that's right. All I guess I could describe it as being kind of in the zone and ready to go out there and take care of business. I had actually been really sick leading up to that fight. I was out for like 7 days, you know, about 3 weeks before the fight. I didn't eat for more than a week. I had some kind of stomach thing going on, and we almost pulled out of the fight. And then 2 weeks before the fight, I started feeling better, and we were like, you know what, let's just go ahead, or, you know, kind of, you know, let the chips fall where they may. And I think I may have come out with that intensity and that killer instinct in that fight, because I knew I probably only had about a round and a half in me, because I hadn't been able to train. Training camp had gone, quite a major hiccup in it.
Well, you've been training at Jackson's for a while now, but you seem to be turning the corner in terms of generating power on your shots around the time of those fights. Mm-hmm. Was there something specific which changed or improved about you as an individual, your training, that caused you to start KOing guys clean with single punches?
I think it was probably a couple different things. You know, obviously, you know, technique has a big plays a big role in it. But I've been diligently working my strength and conditioning for years now. I think in those years, I think that was maybe 2011, 2012, those things were really starting to show in my game.
Well, in addition to your power, you're also you've also showed technical mastery. I mean, when you outpointed Nick Diaz for the interim title over 5 rounds in really a striking clinic, and again, this was another close fight, but one that I think most objective scorers had you in favor. Talk about the game plan going into that fight and to what extent you were able to execute it. I mean, it really appeared that you were fighting flawlessly for the most part.
Well, a guy like Diaz, who is a volume puncher, you know, the guy just throws machine gun strikes nonstop, continues to come forward. One strategy to fight a guy like that is to stick and move. And instead of getting in these prolonged exchanges with him, which doesn't go well for his opponents, you know, he's shown time and time again, if you stand there and get in these, you know, prolonged exchanges, usually you're going to be on the losing end of that. And the dude's got a granite chin. Paul Daly hit him clean with a left hook. You know, and Paul Daly puts everybody just, you know, clean out. And, you know, and Nick Diaz, you know, popped back up and ended up finishing Daly. The game plan was to get out there, stick and move, you know, hit him with some big shots. you know, use the leg kicks to, you know, kind of limit his mobility and, you know, eventually, eventually kind of take away a big tool, which is his just forward progress. You know, the fight didn't go as well as I'd like. I'd like to, you know, have finished the fight. I executed the game plan in the fight and came away with the win. I think that a rematch may be on the horizon, you know, in the next year or two. I don't know. He's back. That's something I might be interested in.
Yeah, and he's fighting, of course, Anderson Silva, and that should be a very, very interesting fight. I mean, there's a lot of people interested in that fight. And those are two huge names out there. Do you have any prediction or analysis on that matchup based on your experience against Nick?
Nick has a hard time with guys who use angles. And Anderson is, you know, he's got incredible footwork and, you know, can make angles and strike and capitalize. I think on paper Anderson Silva should win decisively. But I think that if Silva doesn't take Diaz seriously, which, you know, I think that he has a tendency to get out there and clown around a little bit. I think that could be a mistake. And if he does that, I could see an upset.
Interesting. And before I let you go, I just wanted to get your take on the title fight with GSP. And I thought you had a very good overall showing, and you obviously had him hurt badly with that head kick, more hurt than I think anyone has since he was finished by the Hail Mary shot from Matt Serra years ago. Looking back on that fight and the head kick specifically, do you think there was a reason he was able to survive and actually finish the fight? I mean, did you have any specific regrets in terms of the things that you did or didn't do in the immediate aftermath of the head kick?
Well, I think probably the reason he survived is he, you know, This is a sport full of you know, guys in incredible shape, and GSP is probably the most in shape guy, and I think that has a lot to do with your ability to recover when you're hurt. And I think that played a big role in him being able to come back. And he's just nearly the champion. GSP, he's the man, and I think that he really wanted it. He loved being the champion. As far as what I would have done differently, I got really excited when I landed the head kick. It was like, I think I got overly emotional. I think my emotions got the better of me, and I went in there and tried to throw everything at him to finish. And after that, I think I kind of had blown my wad, you know, when he popped up and wasn't finished, I was like, it was kind of a, I don't know. I think psychologically, it kind of got to me. I wish I had just kind of stayed a little bit cooler, a little bit calmer, more of a sustained attack. But that's how it goes. You live and you learn.
You look at your weight division now and the title picture has certainly changed complete with GSP being on hiatus or however you want to describe it. That now you got Robbie Lawler who's the champion. I think that's a very interesting matchup for Carlos Condit.
I've watched Lawler from way back in the day, and I always liked him as a fighter, and I'd love to get that shot at the belt again. First things first. I got to get back to 100% with training and with my recovery, and see who they match me up against, and then that'll be the first step towards fighting whoever it is who has the belt when I get to the number one contender.
If you had a preference, who would you like to fight in your return to the UFC, or does it matter?
Who would I like to fight? I kind of threw out the Diaz rematch. I'd still like to to kind of settle the score there, because, you know, even though I won the fight, there was a lot of controversy. I'd like to kind of end the controversy. I was looking at maybe fighting Matt Brown. We were talking to UFC about Matt Brown, but he wanted to fight sooner than I was going to be ready for the national with Tarek Saffiedine. So that's also a fight I'd like. The rematch with Woodley, definitely on my radar.
Well, Carlos, thanks so much for joining me on the show. I know we had a lot of questions, and I want to thank you for answering them. Do you have any social media sites or any sponsors that you want to thank?
I'm on got a Facebook page, just Carlos Condit fan page, on Twitter just at Carlos Condit, Instagram Carlos_Condit. My website is campcondit.com, and that's about it. And thank you for having me on.
Well, it's a privilege to have you on the show here. We're really very appreciative, and we wish you the best of luck in the future and the return to the cage. We're looking forward to seeing more excellent fights and performances. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Trying to breathe, Wilson, standing around my throat, I strangled and mangled another SS carcass call.
Clive here on Carson's Corner. Hope you enjoyed our interview with Carlos Monson, and I hope that we didn't have too many technical difficulties to view because my computer was disconnected from Blog Talk Radio. The interview should have still been playing, so you should have received the interview in entirety. All right, if for some reason part of it didn't come up, I'll re-upload it, and you can hear it, okay, right here at blogtalkradio.com/Carson's, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. Carlos on that really appears to be on the path back to the UFC or back to the world of mixed martial arts. And you know, a lot of people that want to see him fight Matt Brown. There's some folks over at the Underground Forum. Thanks to the folks over at the Underground Forum for listening out there. A lot of Carlos Condit fans there. And they're going to see him fight Matt Brown. That would be a great fight versus Matt Brown. I would have to think that Carlos would be the favorite in that fight. Would be in that fight if I were betting money on Carlos. But nonetheless, it would still be very interesting fight for the fans out there. And there's so many people, so much in the UFC welterweight division that it's just amazing to see, you know, who he'll fight next, what the next matchup is going to be. The person we're working on from the welterweight division who we actually have a chance of getting on is Johnny Hendricks. We actually spoke to Johnny Hendricks back in 2009 and connections down there in the great state of Texas. And so we'll be hoping you, Johnny Hendricks, on the program time soon. We're really trying to, you know, ever since we formed this partnership with MMA Latest News, we're really trying to deliver you shows each Monday like we used to do back in the day every week here on Carson's Corner. And yes, look, I get it. You know, we're not a market-approved show. We don't have a lot of production value. There's not a lot of fancy bumpers and music and whatnot. But you know what? The best part of our show has always been our interviews. And I believe that we offer interviews that you can't get anywhere else. I really do believe that. You know, we really go in depth on the questions, the issues, I know that a lot of people that we've interviewed over the years have really enjoyed the experience. So Carson's Corner is almost like a reference point. It's almost like a database for people out there to learn more about fighters and learn more about, you know, what's going on, because we put a tremendous amount of research. My intern, Donnie Riley, really puts a lot of research into this, and I do too, and we all do. We all pitch in here on Carson's Corner. And so it's just, you're not going to get that a lot of places elsewhere. You're just not, you know. And so now that we're on MMA Latest News, which is a new emerging site now, very, very good professional site. I really enjoy visiting that site. There's a real opportunity to really make some news, really make some headlines with some of the stuff that we're doing here. And you know, MMA Latest News is linked with a few different sites. They have a sort of a relationship with the Underground Forum, with Reddit MMA, and a lot of sites out there. And so we're hoping to bring a lot of news to the world of mixed martial arts in 2015. It's been a while since this show has released a scoop about the world of mixed martial arts. I mean, you remember back in the day, you know, when Carson's Corner was the show, when you can tune in to hear who Kimbo Slice's next opponent was. We called that when Kimbo was going to be fighting for Elite XC, and, you know, we called his opponent James Thompson. You know, we released a lot of scoops over the years. We Ross Clifton, the fighter out of California who passed away. We released that on Carson's Corner. The Guy Mesger story, where Guy Mesger saved a lady in a Dick's Sporting Goods parking lot from a knife attack, and he was severely injured after that attack. We released that. I mean, it's just so many different stories that we've released. And I remember last year, we released one of the finalists for the Bellator's Fightmaster show, which earned us an angry phone call from the folks over at Spike TV. David Schwarz, I want to say director of publicity there, marketing or something. I forget his exact title, but yeah, you know, he called, and I actually spoke to him afterwards last year. Very, very nice individual, and you know, they were understandably upset. We had a responsibility to release that. We think, or you know, you can argue about the merit of whether that's news or whatnot, but you know, we released it and it got all over the place, and Spike TV didn't want me covering any of the Bellator events. So you know, for a while they purposely didn't credential me, and it wasn't until September of this year that Bellator actually allowed me to cover one of their events, and I covered it with Eddie Goldman. I met David, and very nice guy, and you know, he said basically, you know, they were reluctant to give me press passes, but you know, he vouched for me, and I really appreciate that. And we're going to be covering Bellator in the future in 2015. You know, so you know, we've been around. We've been around for a long time, and it's fun to go back and reminisce over some of the stories and some of the news that we've been involved with over the years. And a lot of sites have actually taken some of our news scoops. I mean, we could go back years and see a certain pattern with certain sites out there that don't like to quote their sources when it comes to a source that they don't like. And I think that's unfortunate. I really do. But we're still here. We're here for the long haul here on Carson's Corner. And, you know, we're starting to heat up now. We really are. We're going to give you shows each week. We're going to be releasing news. Hopefully we'll give you some scoops in the upcoming year of mixed martial arts. And hopefully we'll do big things with the folks over at MMALatestNews.com. I encourage you to visit that site at MMALatestNews.com. All right, yeah, so the big news really is UFC 182. I see that, speaking of a matchup we were talking about earlier, Cowboy Cerrone is basically saying that Miles Jury is not undefeated. This is on MMA Junkie. I don't have it up in front of me. I was scrolling through this before, and you know, I don't know what he's suggesting there. I mean, I don't know who Miles Jury lost to, or what type of decisions that he may have won that he shouldn't have won. I don't have his record in front of me. I mean, I know he looked very good in his last fights, and this is Cowboy's fifth fight in a year. Isn't that unbelievable? I mean, you see, that's the thing. You know, that's why I'm in favor of the lawsuit. That's why I actually was part of the conference call that took place with last week or the week before, announced the major lawsuit filed by former UFC fighters, one of which, Kung Lee, is still under contract with the UFC. And because a guy like Cowboy Cerrone can fight five times, okay, and he could win, he's won, he's a great fighter, not every UFC fighter gets a chance to fight five times. It's not going to happen. And so where you have just a small group of people that are able to really get the fruits of their labor in the context of what the UFC is paying their fighters. And that's why I support Eddie Goldman, the host of No Holds Barred, recently did an interview with Carlos Newton, who was part of the lawsuit, really was instrumental in putting that together, working behind the scenes. And I encourage you to listen to that, because Carlos Newton is a smart man. He really is. He knows what he's talking about, very, very intelligent guy. And he brings a unique perspective to the lawsuit and the, quote, free market in MMA, it's you know, they had a good discussion about boxing and about the structure of the sport, and it's definitely worth listening to. nhbnews.blogspot.com, Eddie Goldman's site, or nhbnews.podomatic.com. All right, that's it for this week's edition of Carson's Corner. apologize for the aforementioned technical difficulties. I encourage you to visit MMALatestNews.com. I encourage you to friend me on Facebook at Facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA and follow me here on Blog Talk Radio, BlogTalkRadio.com/Carson's Corner. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.